Basic Brewing Radio is sponsored in part by the American Homebrewers Association. Get ready. Saturday, May 7th is the American Homebrewers Association's 25th Big Brew for National Homebrew Day. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing to download the official recipes, the Community American Lager and Dark Inception Imperial Porter. Find a homebrew supply shop and dust off your homebrewing skills with how-to videos. Plus, you'll get a promo code for $5 off an American Homebrewers Association membership when you make the Big Brew Pledge. That's homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing to get $5 off when you make the Big Brew Pledge by May 7th, 2022. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 21st, 2022. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about homebrewing. This week, Matt Giovannisi from the Brew Cabin blog and YouTube channel shares his easy approach to water chemistry as part of our continuing recipe development series. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. This week, I'm planning to release to financial subscribers an early look at the next video episode. This is the long-awaited Christmas Day Kettle Sour turned Brett beer. At the time of the recording, the video, it was still pretty young in the bottle, but I wanted to taste it early to, you know, kind of benchmark the level of funk in the beer. I think that eventually the Brettanomyces will make the flavor of the beer more complex over time, or at least that's what I'm hoping for. I'm brewing a lot this week. I brewed a couple of small batches already. I did a beer with a bit of roasted barley to use in the tincture sampler. I want to find some flavors that'll be good in a dark beer. And the next day I brewed a six-pack batch based on Steve's suggestion in the previous fruit tincture show. You may remember that Steve suggested I should brew a beer based on the lemon custard pie that I had made. So I used American Two-Row, Breese Special Roast, that's what Steve suggested for the crustiness, and a bit of lactose to add to the kind of sweetness and body of the final beer. And I think that'll make a fun base to put some tinctures into. I've also got ingredients for a big hoppy beer later this week, a 5-gallon batch, because I have an empty keg now. Rest in peace, Passion Fruit Pilsner. That was a tasty one. I want to brew a beer based on the clone recipe of Bell's Two-Hearted Ale, and I've brewed that a couple of times, once with Gvike on the hot porch, and it's turned out really well each time. But this time I'm going to put a spin on it. I'm going to swap the Centennial hops with Simcoe. You know, what will Simcoe bring to this big, juicy American IPA that Centennial doesn't? Or maybe it'll just be the same. I don't know. Can't wait to find out. I'm going to brew that delicious beer in my Warthog Electric Brew-in-a-Bag system from our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave from HighGravityBrew.com. In the olden days of brewing with propane, there was a lot of math that had to happen. You know, figuring out the proper strike water temperature for the amount of grain and water that I had, figuring out how much boiling water to add if I was going to do a step mash or a mash out, and, you know, compensating for the falling temperatures in the mash tun or kettle once I moved to brew in a bag. I mashed in the kettle, of course. Nowadays, I just set my strike water temperature to my target mash temp with my Warthog EBC 130 controller and dough in. And as the grain takes the temperature down a bit, the big Blickman boil coil in the bottom of the kettle kicks in and kicks on to compensate. And by the time I've doughed in pretty much and chased all the dough balls, I'm at my target temperature. And I stay there for the duration of the mash. A Warthog system from HighGravityBrew.com can take the pain out of propane. And if you use the code EBC75BB when you get your Warthog gear, you'll save $75. That's EBC75BB. That's at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. Now, as you know, and as I've said many times on the show, I have a mental block for water chemistry. You know, I kind of get flashbacks of Mr. Duncan's chemistry class back at Hot Springs High, I guess. But it doesn't have to be that difficult, and Matt Giovannisi from brewcabin.com tells us why. Matt Giovannisi, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me back again.
We're going to talk about the subject that I'm phobic about, but you've promised to make it easy.
I'm going to try.
And that's water chemistry. You know, Steve and I have done water chemistry samplers where we've compared different balances of chemicals in the water with different styles of beer. And, you know, we could tell there was a difference. And, you know, the right water chemistry makes beer better. So, you know, I know it's a thing and I know it's an important thing. But it's just, you know, I just have this mental block. I can't explain it. But how did you get confident in playing with your water chemistry?
I got confident because when I was a 13-year-old boy, my first summer job was at a pool store. So, and I tested all my friends' parents' pool water, and they all came to me for advice on how to deal with their water chemistry in their giant pools. And I continue to operate in that industry to this day. So I've been in the swimming pool industry for over 25 years.
So compared to a swimming pool, a brew pot is no big deal.
It's a small body of water. Yeah. It's like, you know, we deal with hot tubs too, and that's even small. It's smaller than a pool, and then a kettle is smaller than a hot tub. I guess unless you are operating in a commercial brewery, then it's bigger than a hot tub.
And hopefully you're not putting as many chemicals in your brew pot as you're putting in your
yeah,
hot
you're
tub.
Not, yeah, you're not adding chlorine, you know. Yeah, it's pretty much – yeah, and you're not adding well, I guess most of the other stuff you're adding, you're not adding phosphate remover or all the other things that people add to their pools. That's a little bit silly, but they'll sell it to you.
Well, that's another show.
That's another podcast completely.
Yeah, exactly.
That no one will ever listen to. 'Cause I've tried.
And I don't know if you want to mention or plug your water, you know, that side of your business and your brain now or not.
I mean, if you have a swimming pool or a hot tub, you can visit swimuniversity.com. And that is my day job.
There you go. Swimuniversity.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a brisk business over there. Y'all are popular.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing it for since 2004.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a minute.
It beats me, even.
by one year, right?
Yeah. But still, that's a long time.
It was a long time, yeah.
Well, speaking of pools, we don't want our beers to taste like a pool, or the water that goes into our beers tasting like a pool. So I guess the most important thing is to get stuff out before you're putting stuff in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so obviously, you can't do this with a giant pool, but the thing that I think will make all of this easier is knowing where you're starting from. And even if you own a pool or you're just using tap water, you have to test the water frequently. And when you test the water, you know what's in the water, and then you know what you can adjust or take away. And so what I always tell people to do, and what I, you know, and as I started getting into water chemistry, the first thing is just figuring out your water source and what you want to use. So you have, in my opinion, you have three different types of water sources that you can use for brewing. One is your tap water in your home. Two is distilled water, or water that you can buy at your local grocery store. Or reverse osmosis water, which you can either make at home or buy also at the grocery store, I guess certain grocery stores. And the big difference between tap water and RO and distilled water is that with tap water, it depends on where you live and it depends on your water source. So if you're getting it from, you know, one reservoir, you could have totally different water, and that water has to travel from that reservoir all the way to your house. And as it travels through the pipes in your house, it could pick up things there. And so you could, in theory, and I've done this in certain counties, will allow this to happen, They will send you a water report from your reservoir, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they sometimes have them even set up for brewing, because there's a lot of, you know, breweries within your town. You might actually be able to get access to those water reports. But when you do that, you have to remember that, one, I mean, at least where I lived, the water reservoir would change depending on weather. So it might switch. We would get an email letting us know it would switch, but it depends on, you know, the time of year and what kind of precipitation you have. And then it also depends on how far it's traveling and what it's going to pick up. And so the best solution there is just to get your water tested at the source in which you're using it.
Mm.
So, you know, you could get it tested. Like, you could turn on your sink and just fill up a bottle and send it in to get tested, or buy a test kit and do it yourself. But is that, even the sink, even that faucet, is that where you're pulling your water from when you're brewing? You know, for me, when I brewed before at my old place, it came out of the spigot outside.
Mm.
So I would test it through there and through the hose that I would use, right? So I would test it all the way through every single thing that it's going to touch. And I had two ways of testing. One, you can send your test results into a company like Ward Labs, which I highly recommend. It does cost, some money, but it's pretty fast, and it's the most, I believe it's going to be the most accurate, because that's what they do. That's what they do there. They test water and other things. Or you could buy a test kit, which is going to be even more expensive than just sending a sample in. And I've had varying results with the test kits at home. I always found that the Ward Labs gave me the most accurate results. And so that's what I would do. I would get that water checked exactly the way you would enter it into your kettle. So that even if you're using a pre-filter, if you're using some sort of like RV filter to remove chloramines and chlorine from your water, some sort of carbon filter, then, you know, make sure that you're filling up your sample from that source.
Now, I've heard that if you use a carbon filter, like I have a pure water filter on my mm-hmm. faucet that I get my brewing water from. Now, I've heard that those don't – they take out the chlorine and the chloramines, which is important mm-hmm. To do, very important, because you can get some nasty off flavors from that.
Yeah.
But do those water filters, the charcoal ones or carbon mm-hmm. ones, do they alter the water chemistry other than the chlorine and chloramines?
I don't know the answer to that, but I would assume that they're not going to remove as much mineral content, mm-hmm. but they do remove chloramines.
Mm-hmm.
And the slower that you pour from those, the more effective it is. Ah. You know, whenever you pour water into like a Brita filter, you know how it kind of like drips slowly?
Mm-hmm.
So the slower that you pass it through, which, you know, sometimes I would do, because if you get one of those RV filters that you can attach to a garden hose, and if you're going to use a garden hose, don't use a garden hose, like a green garden hose. I would buy some sort of RV drinking water hose.
Mm-hmm.
And I would use an RV filter, a carbon filter specifically for drinking water. And the slower that you turn the faucet on and pour the water through it, the more effective it's going to be at removing those chloramines. And the other thing you could do is if you don't want to use an active carbon filter, you're not going to be filtering your water, you could just fill up your kettle the night before and leave it open to the air, and the chloramines will gas off enough to when you brew, there won't be that, you won't get those off flavors. And you could also add potassium metabisulfite, which does neutralize chloramines instantly. So you could add, you know, a couple of grams of that into your water before you brew, and that will neutralize it. But that's really just to get rid of that chlorine flavor that you definitely don't want in the water. That's like the biggest thing you don't want. But as far as removing mineral content, the only way you're really going to do that is by the process of distillation or with reverse osmosis.
And you, I want to get to your setup here in a minute, but mm-hmm. but you also have to make sure if you're using one of those filters to change it frequently or change it when it needs to be changed. Like, for instance, just recently I noticed that the ice coming out of my ice maker was started to taste nasty again.
Yeah.
So I went to the, you know, went to the hardware store and got a new inline water filter for that because it, you know, it stopped working after a while.
Right.
And it was still letting water through, but it was just, you know, not doing its job anymore. So you got to make sure you take care of that. But mm-hmm. you've gone to the sort of the extreme, and through your YouTube video and your Brew Cabin YouTube channel, you in the video on water treatment, you show off your reverse osmosis system. So you mm-hmm. have a system in your fancy homebrew setup where you're actually making your own reverse osmosis water there. Talk about that process.
So, when I was at the old place again, and you know, for the record, I'm not a chemist. I didn't even go to college. I never took a chemistry course in high school. It's really just from, again, the confidence that was gained was through the pool industry. And so what I know is I'm just confident in water chemistry in general. And so when I went to go before, you know, when I lived in my old place and when I brewed before that and all the other places that I've ever brewed, it was always, you know, and again, like if you're listening to this and you're like, and even I can't make it easy for you. if the water tastes good coming out of the tap, just brew with it, right? That and you hear that all the time. And so, and that's the way I absolutely used to brew. The only thing, and what I was talking to you about off air, is I kind of grew up in an area where I was always told not to drink the tap water. Mm. It's just not a good idea, right? And so I would, like, my family would always have some sort of filtration method, whether it was like built into the refrigerator, or we had, you know, when Brita came out, we had those things, or we had one of those, you know, the ones that go underneath your sink. So we've always had some sort of filtration, or obviously just drink bottled water or something. So in the old place, I would always filter my water through a carbon filter at the very least before I would brew with it. And so when I was moving into the new place, the one thing I knew that I absolutely had to have, no negotiations, was an RO system, because I wanted the ability to start every water profile that I developed for my recipes from scratch. Now, I was always doing water chemistry additions with my tap water, because I used to get my tap water tested every 3 months. Because obviously with seasonality, things can change. With reservoirs, they can change. With pipes issues, they can change. So I used to get it tested frequently, and then I would build my profiles based on that. And what was nice about where I lived in Colorado was the water coming out of the ground, coming out of the tap, was pretty good, like really, really good. So I had a really good starting base for developing water chemistry profiles. But in the new brewery, I have zero. So, you know, running it through an RO system does remove the chloramines because it does have active carbon. It has a sediment filter, which gets rid of just most of the sediment. And then it also has this reverse osmosis membrane, which is a really, really tight filter that just removes all the minerals. So you're basically starting with pure, and it's not exactly pure, but it's close enough to pure H2O.
And you said something in the video that I didn't realize, is that for every gallon of RO water that you collect, you're mm-hmm. also wasting a gallon.
Yeah, because it's only letting through so much water. Only so much water can get through the reverse osmosis system that it just has all this extra wastewater with all the mineral deposits. So, basically I have a giant reservoir that's about, I think it's 30 gallons, and it's just a plastic reservoir built for drinking water. And what I do is I only turn on the RO system. I only supply the RO system with water right before I'm about to brew. And I can make 10 gallons of water in about, I think, about 4 hours.
Hmm.
And then sometimes, and I'm not always good at doing this, but I do have a black discharge hose, which does waste that 1 gallon. I try to collect that water and use it for cleaning, so I'm not completely wasting that water.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So, So yeah, so I've actually had the water. So I've tested, I've sent, when I first got the RO system installed, I created a bunch of RO water and then sent a sample into Ward Labs to make sure that the RO system was actually working. And I did have a clean profile to start with. And I did. Yeah.
Well, not everybody has the wherewithal or the energy to build their own RO system.
No, I mean I didn't build this system from scratch, but I just got it on Amazon.
Right.
And it just but
that's
it up. Yeah.
You know, but that's and you should be commended. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that you have it. I think it's a good thing, and I'm envious. I'm jealous. That's what
it's worth. It's just another thing you have to think about though when it comes to brewing. It's like, oh, I forgot to turn on the water, so I'm like, now I have to wait 4 hours. Like, you know, I do have a stopper. Like, I built a stopper into it, so I technically could leave the water running and it would stop when it fills up. But I don't know. I just don't like that idea.
only takes one time to have your brew
it.
Space flooded
exactly.
For you. Well, I collect my water from the sink into 1 gallon jugs and carry them downstairs to the patio. So that's the I'm low tech. I told you I'm going to be brewing a riff on the clone recipe for Bell's Two Hearted Ale this week. And I think it's still the most popular craft beer in the country right now. It's one of my favorites, for sure. And of course, I'm going to use yeast from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. I'm going to use the Imperial A07 Flagship. It's the Chico strain, which is historically the go-to strain for clean, hoppy American pale ales and IPAs. Flagship gets in, gets the job done, and then gets out of the way to let those delicious hop flavors shine. And I know if I pitch a pouch of Imperial in the afternoon, my airlock will probably be bubbling before bedtime. Those 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package ensures success. My stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. And Imperial suggests a shelf life of 4 months, so I don't have to worry if I get derailed this week and have to delay my brew. Ask your local homebrew store about Imperial Organic Yeast and check them out at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. So if you get your water profile, so you know what's in your water, or you go to the grocery store and you get RO water.
Or distilled.
Distilled or spring water.
Yeah, now spring water isn't pure water. That's going to be similar to your tap water.
It's got stuff added into it, so that you got to figure out again what the minerals are in that, because they either collect it from the source or they have quote unquote spring water, drinking water, where they add chemicals to it to make it taste better.
Yeah, so I would, if you're going to use spring water, the only thing you'll know for sure is that there's not going to be any chlorine in it. So that's it's good drinking water, right? So. But if you're trying to build a specific water profile and you're using spring water, if you go and get that specific spring water tested, or you look up on their website and they're gracious enough to actually send you what's in their water profile, then at least if you're using the same brand, you will have that starting point. But yeah, that's almost the same as using tap water with a filter.
And the Steve and I, in the first episode of our water sampler series, I forgot to use RO water, and I just used filtered water and then added chemicals on top of it. And there was a difference. I mean, there bad things happened, you know, because
what happened?
We added chemicals on top of my tap water, my filtered tap water, and it was too much.
Which chemicals did you add?
Oh, we'll have to go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah.
I don't have my brewer's logbook in front of me, but there was a listener who was kind enough to send us water, you know, the ingredients for the water profiles, you know, as they pertain to, you know, hoppy beers or malty beers or balanced. But they, you know, they were essentially minute amounts. So you didn't think it would, or I didn't think it would, you know, make that much difference. But if you're just blindly adding chemicals on top of whatever chemicals are in your tap water or whatever your water source is, it ain't going to work necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, you could think about it like if you're going to make a mayonnaise marinade for some chicken, the recipe calls for you to add salt to that marinade. Well, you have to remember that the mayonnaise starts with salt. It comes with salt. So you have to be aware of what kind of saltiness already exists before you go and add more.
Right.
Or else you're going to have something overly salty. Yeah.
There were some of those beers that we had in that first round that was just like, ugh, this tastes salty or this tastes chemically. It was too much.
Yep.
So be aware of that. So what are the chemicals that you are in your chemical pantry there when you're dealing with water?
So I have the ones that I use every single brew day, calcium chloride. I use gypsum.
And what do each of them do?
So calcium chloride adds calcium and chloride to your water. So calcium chloride is, and I don't know, again, not a chemist, not 100% on the chemical makeups, but similar to calcium hardness that you would add to a swimming pool, and similar to the rock salt that you add when you need to melt ice, because what happens is when calcium chloride comes in contact with water, it actually heats up. What I usually add calcium chloride for is to create more mouthfeel. Right. So that's going to make the beers kind of perceivably thicker. Gypsum or calcium sulfate adds calcium and sulfate to your water. And that's what people add. That's the Burton on Trent. You know, that's what's going to add that hoppy bite, is going to make the water maybe feel a little crisper. And I believe it's like more of a perceived crisper. You're not adding, you know, wheat or oats to actually make the beer viscous, but you get that sort of perceived, palate, you know, taste. I also use Epsom salt, which is magnesium sulfate. That is the stuff that you use in the bathtub. But if you go and buy Epsom salt, just make sure it doesn't have any other additives that would be good in a bathtub, like lavender or anything like that, because that'll screw you up. Also, Epsom salt is a laxative. So if you're having issues with, you know, beer gas, and you know the kind I'm talking about, this, maybe you're adding too much Epsom salt, perhaps. I don't know.
Crop dusting.
Yeah. So, and then I also use kosher salt or sodium.
And those just add a saltiness?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, even with salt and food, it just sort of highlights flavors. Obviously, it's good in, say, something like a gyoza, where you would add quite a bit more than what I normally add. But like in my New England IPA recipe, I think I only add maybe 1 to 3 grams. And that's starting with, you know, 1 to 3 grams in 8 gallons of water. Mm-hmm. So it's a pinch of salt. And so the other chemicals that I have on hand but don't necessarily use as often, just because of the RO water situation that I currently have, I do have chalk or calcium carbonate. And I have baking soda, which is sodium bicarbonate. And then I also carry potassium metabisulfate, which I used to use. That's a remnant from my old place where I used to add that to every single batch, no matter what, just in case my RV filter didn't get out all the chloramines. I just wanted that backup plan. I would throw in, I think it was like half a gram even. it wasn't very much, and it just neutralizes the chloramines in the water. So that's what I have on hand. And you can also use potassium metabisulfite for a few other things. You could use it for killing yeast. So I think winemakers use this a lot to stop fermentation before they add fruits and back sweeteners to their beverages. And you could also use it to scrub oxygen while you package beer, which I've never actually used, but I've been hearing the Brewlosophy guys talk a lot about using potassium metabisulfate for reducing oxidation in certain beers. So something to look into there as well.
Yeah, but what do they know?
Yeah.
just a joke.
Yes.
Every day I read, you know, experiments that they're doing, and I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah.
They're working a lot harder than me.
Well, they're the reason. they're the reason I even took water chemistry seriously, or started to take water chemistry seriously, because their first experiment, I think, came back with, came back significant that water chemistry did have a noticeable impact on the beer. And It makes sense. I mean, you know, people have been goosing their water profiles for millennium. So it's been going on for a long time.
And we should say that potassium metabisulfite are also known as Camden tablets.
Right.
Camden tablets. You see those in your homebrew store.
You'll also see sodium metabisulfite, which is similar.
Hmm.
Just sodium instead of potassium.
Now, you mentioned baking soda. I'm not sure if you mentioned lactic or phosphoric acid.
No.
But those are adjusters of pH in the beer and in the mash. One of the tools that you're going to need, if you are going to get into water chemistry, you're going to need a scale that is sensitive enough to measure in, you know, fractions of a gram.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, they're not expensive. You can find them, you know, on, you know, large retailers, online retailers.
Uh-huh.
The one I've got, I guess you call it a jewelry scale or something like that. It's I think Steve's called it my drug dealer scale.
Right. I think it's called G Dealer, right? I think we have the same one. The one that I have, and I don't know how about you, but yeah, I think I paid under $20 for it, and I've had it for 7 years without changing the batteries.
It's the one that has the little arm that swings out of the side of it.
Oh, no, I don't have that one.
Okay, that's the one I have. It's a little square, and then you push on the little arm, and it comes out, and it's got the little display on it and stuff. But, yeah, it's super, super easy to use, and super – especially when you're – either when you're making small batches of beer or you're playing with water chemistry, you need something like that that's sensitive. And it's not expensive.
So. No. I use it for hops, too.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So, like I say, especially for the small batches, you know, when I'm measuring, you know, 5 grams of hop pellets to put in into a beer. So how do you figure out how much of this stuff to add? I mean, you said that, you know, you're not a chemistry genius.
No.
How do you figure out where, you know, how much of this stuff to add into your beer?
Well, okay. It's great to have – you can do it two ways. I recommend software. I've been using calculators and software, I mean, in the pool industry forever. And they're out there, and a lot of them are free. There's some of the few that I like. I mean, obviously you have your Beersmith recipe formulator, which I used to use. I used to use an app called Beer Tools. I now use an app called Brewfather, which is excellent. You could also use a free spreadsheet by I'm not going to get his last name right, but I know his first name is Martin, and he has a spreadsheet called Brew and Water. So it's like BRUN Water, and you can find that for free. And that is absolutely where you should start. It can be a little bit confusing, but again, as long as you know what your starting profile is, all it's really doing is just adjusting the chemicals depending on what you want. And again, it's easier to add and harder to take away. Taking away requires some sort of filtration or distillation or dilution of some kind, but adding is very easy. So if you're starting with a good water profile that's nice and low in minerals, then you can pretty much make any sort of water profile you want. If you're starting at zero with RO water or distilled water, then you can do, I mean, then the sky's the limit. And what's nice with RO water is you're basically, you have all these different, and this is the ones that I use, and there's more that goes into it. But again, in the effort of keeping things simple, I look at 5 different ingredients. I look at calcium, magnesium, sodium, chloride, and sulfate. And those are the ones that I'm trying to adjust. Now, pH and alkalinity are separate in this conversation, but those are the things I look at when I'm adding, you know, my brewing salts or my brewing chemicals. And so I'm trying to get those bumped up. Now, if you look at your tap water profile, a lot of what you're going to see is going to be low parts per million. That's how it's all measured. It's measured in PPM. And so if you're starting with a really good water profile with low mineral count, you're going to be good to go. If you're starting in a place that has high mineral counts where your water is really hard, then you're going to have some issues with brewing certain softer styles. You know, so it, in that case, it would be a good idea to either and no matter how much filtration you do with like a carbon filter, you're never going to get rid of all that calcium. It's going to stay in the water. But what you can do is you can dilute that water with distilled water if you don't want to use 8 to 10 gallons of distilled water and buy all that, or you don't want to buy and lug around, you know, 8 to 10 gallons of RO water, or you don't want to do it with spring water. You can simply get a couple of gallons and dilute that water down so you can bring your calcium levels down at the very least.
Yeah, that's a good point. One that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah.
You know, it's, if you got high chemicals, just adding more of the balancing chemicals might not be.
Yeah, it won't do anything. Just, right. Yeah.
And you'll just get you'll have what happened with my first experiment. You'll just get chemically tasting mm-hmm. beer.
Yeah. No. And it all depends on where you live and where your water source mm-hmm. is. And you know, you could have well water, which is not even city controlled. So that you would absolutely want to get tested. And those have, you know, other issues that you could run into with like copper and iron and other, you know, metals that could be in the water that you would certainly want to get rid of before brewing. Oh, actually, you wouldn't want to get rid of copper because copper actually does help with yeast. It is a yeast nutrient, I believe. I'm not sure about iron, though.
Yeah. When I was growing up, my cousins lived on a place out in the country, and their water smelled and tasted so much like sulfur that even when you walked in their house, it smelled like eggs,
yeah.
Rotten eggs.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they would probably need to buy their,
yeah,
buy their water.
Yeah, I would. Or it's like everything's just going to taste like a poorly fermented lager.
That's right. Yeah, it tastes like the fermenter smells.
Yes.
When they... Let's talk for a minute about our friends and sponsors, Ricky and Kelly from Groenfell and Havoc Meaderies in Vermont. I was just reading a blog post that Ricky the Mead Maker wrote on Groenfell.com titled, "Wait, isn't mead disgustingly sweet?" That's in reference to comments mead makers tend to hear from people that go along the lines of, "I've tried mead before and it's just too sweet for me." Well, that's sort of where the inspiration for craft mead from Groenfell and Havoc comes from. Most of the craft meads you'll find on Groenfell.com are deliciously drinkable, fairly low in alcohol, at least for meads, dry, but not so dry that you lose that delicious honey character. Take, for example, Root of All Evil, one of my favorites. It has a spicy ginger punch to go along with that honey character of the mead. And if you also go for the big, higher alcohol, sweeter meads, still done tastefully, you can check out the Ancient Collection on Groenfell.com. Everything is delicious, no matter where you lean on the sweetness scale. Check it out at family-owned and operated Groenfell.com. That's Groenfell. So essentially, you enter in your... Once you know what's in the water that you're brewing with, you enter mm-hmm. that information into the spreadsheet or into the software. And then you can – I watched your video. On your video, it said it looked easy. You just pick the water profile where you want to get to. You know, I want to brew a malty beer. I want to brew a hoppy beer. And it gets – you know, it gets pretty detailed as far as the beer styles, you know, that are open to it, at least the software that you were using.
Yeah, they all the softwares come with your base. And even the spreadsheet that I mentioned comes with, like, you know, if you want to brew, and sometimes they'll have specific styles like Guinness. So like where Guinness is or Pilsen, you know, if you want to build brew a Czech Pils. But, you know, I've read and I've heard things that you really shouldn't trust. Let's say if you wanted to make a like a Guinness, for example, you wouldn't follow the water profile of Ireland, right, or Dublin, because they're absolutely changing their water profile before they're using their water, right?
Yeah.
So what they'll show you is, you know, hoppy pale or hoppy dark, or, you know, balanced dark or balanced light or dry light, dry dark. So you'll see like basic words like that, and you can really just follow those profiles. They work incredibly well. Like if any time, whenever I'm in doubt of what water profile to choose when I'm creating a recipe, I just go with balanced, because balanced, it's not going to be offensive in, it's not going to have the hot bite if you have, you know, like a high sulfate amount, or it's not going to have that soft, rounded maltiness, which is what you'll get if you add, you know, more chloride than sulfate. You have those ratios there. So I just go with balanced if I'm in doubt with something.
And the software will tell you how much of which chemicals to add.
Yeah, all of them now just have a button that says auto. And you just click, and you click the button, and it auto-calculates how many grams of that chemical to add to your strike and sparge water.
Now,
it's really that simple.
It sounds easy.
Yes.
Yeah, I watched the video, and I was like, I should be doing this.
Yeah, I mean, all you're really – and the other thing, too, if you want to go old school analog, you can do that. They actually – there are charts that exist, and all of it is just based on the volume of water, right? So you look at this, and we used to do this in the pool industry all the time, where if you wanted to adjust your calcium hardness level, your calcium level up by 10 parts per million, so you know you're starting with 0 parts per million and you want to add 10 parts per million and you have 8 gallons, you can just look at a chart and it'll tell you exactly how many grams to add to that amount of water. So you can look that up too, or you can do it on an individual level where you could just see how many grams. In fact, I do have a cheat sheet that'll tell you roughly like how many grams per gallon will raise it how many parts per million. So you could do it all manually if you wanted to, as long as you're just controlling those things that I mentioned, which is calcium, magnesium, sodium, chloride, and sulfate. And it all starts to make sense too when you think about when the relationship to the things you're trying to change to the chemicals that you're adding. They literally just have them in the name. So if you want to add calcium and chloride, if you want to bump up those two numbers, then you would just add calcium chloride, because that's, you know, it's just what it is. Or if you want to, you know, gypsum's, it's when you start getting into those other names like chalk and gypsum and Camden tablets and baking soda and kosher salts and Epsom salt. Those are all not the names of the actual chemicals. They're just, right, you know, the branded names. And so Epsom salt is magnesium sulfate. So if you want to add magnesium and sulfate to your water, you can use magnesium sulfate, or you can use gypsum, which is calcium sulfate. So if you're trying to add more calcium and you're trying to add more sulfate, then use gypsum, which is normally what you would use if you use too much. If you were to use Epsom salt in replace of gypsum, well, again, it's a laxative, so be careful with that.
Some of us need that. So
hey, you can use it. But yeah, it's when you strip away the brand names, does it all of a sudden start to come into picture a little bit?
Now, when do you add this stuff? Is it the same whether you're adjusting your pH or whether you're adding for flavor and mouthfeel?
When do I add it in the process?
Yeah.
So you can add it really whenever you want. You could add it while it's sitting in your glass if you really wanted to. What's nice about – so I always add it prior to when I'm heating up my strike water. So when I brew, just for ease, I heat up my strike and sparge water in the same vessel at the same time. So just like you do, you have 8 gallons of water – that you fill up and you do a what do they call that? A full volume mash, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
with the brew in a bag, it's all the way, at least the way I do it, it's all
right
at once.
So you don't have to split your additions. You can make all your additions right when you put it in the pot, right? So that's what I do essentially, but I do I don't have a brew-in-a-bag system, so I have to do it. I do have Strike water, and I have Sparge water as well. But I treat the water all at once. And what I'll do is I'll – obviously, when I'm creating the recipe also – you know, it does change. And I think the thing we forgot to mention is it's not as simple as – just having target water, right, which is either your tap water or RO water or distilled water, that's your starting water. And then you have the target that you want to reach, right, which is, let's say you want to do just a like a balanced beer, which may have a little bit of chloride, a little bit of sulfate, whatever. Well, when you add malt to the water, that's going to affect the chemistry as well, right? So you're developing the recipe first, and you're using your base water, and then it'll tell you, okay, here's where it's going to start, and then here are the chemicals that you can add, right? Because if you do, and this is more important for pH and alkalinity than it is for, say, magnesium or something like that, because darker malts are more acidic and will drive down your pH. So you may not need to adjust your pH or alkalinity because of the malts that you're using. But the program and the spreadsheet will tell you all this.
Right. But it seems like it would be more important to adjust your pH before the mash than and I've actually added, like, say, there was one experiment where we added varying levels of gypsum to a beer as it was being bottled, and it actually had an effect on the flavor of the beer.
Yeah.
So it seems like you can add the sort of flavoring and, body chemicals later in the process. But – and I'm just talking out of my hat at this point. But it seems like if you're needing to adjust your pH, you probably want to do that, you know, at the mash.
Yeah.
Right?
So
or wrong?
Yeah. Yep. So mash pH, they say, is important, right? And I know that Brewlosophy has done experiments on it where it's like, it may not be that important to get, where you want your mash pH to be between, say, 5.2 and at the very high end, maybe 5.6, but really, really between 5.2 and 5.4, right? And that's your mash pH, which is going to give you the best conversion of those, starches and the sugars. So what a lot of people will do is they will do, they'll add their water chemistry, they'll add their grain, they'll mash in, they'll let it sit for about 15 minutes, then they'll take a sample of the wort, and they'll measure it with a pH meter. And they'll determine, all right, is it high in pH? Is it low in pH? And if it's right in the middle, they don't have to do anything. If it's a little high, say it's above 5.4, you can add an acid. You can add, which is what I use. I use lactic acid, or you mentioned phosphoric acid, right? Mm-hmm. So you can add those acids to bring it down. And then you're doing it in the milliliters if you're doing 5-gallon batches. So you're not adding a ton, and a little goes a long way. And then once you add it, you would stir the mash again, let it kind of self-regulate, stabilize, and then test it again and see if you've hit your target. If your pH is low, you can add baking soda, which is what brings up pH and alkalinity. And so, again, a little goes a long way, especially in these small amounts. And so you would add a little bit, and you can use the calculators on these, tools that we mentioned to figure it out even in the moment. Or you could just do it, play it by ear. Just add 1 milliliter, stir it around, test it, see where you're at, and continue to go and until you have it right. And then that is supposed to give you a really good conversion, which I think is scientifically proven, but whether it makes a difference in the final product is, perceived differently by different people. That's mash pH, and that is something that is helping with the actual brewing process, the conversion process. And a lot of brewers, I know, for example, if you've ever had Hill Farmstead, like, they measure their pH at every single level. The pH of the water before it goes in the mash pH, the boil pH, the pH going in the fermenter, the pH after fermentation, and they're measuring pH the entire way to make sure that they have their perfect number, which is, obviously different depending on your taste. And if you have a sour beer that's going to be lower than if you just have a regular, you know, Pilsner or something.
Are there any, you know, anytime you talk about chemicals, it sounds scary, but are there, mm-hmm. are there any safety things, any safeguards or anything for safety's sake that we need to be keeping in mind when we're playing with chemicals in our beer?
Yes. The two things, two came to mind. One is the laxative thing again. don't overdo it. And the other thing I mentioned earlier, which is how calcium chloride does heat up when it touches water. So that can cause a burn, you know, but I've never been burned by it, but I would be careful, but it's easy to be careful with that. You're dealing with such a small amount.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think we've covered it. I mean, for such a topic that is so scary to me, it doesn't, you know, it's not as scary as I think it is.
The tools are really helpful. I mean, the most helpful. And if you have the ingredients and they're labeled and you have the scale and you have a little spoon to dose with, I mean, it's really not that bad. And the thing is, try it for yourself. I mean, at the very least, the two chemicals that you should try, all right, if you're going to do a beer and you want to see the effects, I think calcium chloride, which you can get anywhere, you know, if you just type it up on, you know, the internet machine, and gypsum or calcium sulfate. Those two chemicals are really, you start there. And if you're trying to make a beer that is, you know, I make a lot of New England IPAs, which, you know, and we've talked about on the show before, which does require more calcium chloride than it does sulfate, or more calcium chloride than gypsum. And that will give you that fuller, rounder mouthfeel with an accentuation on maltiness as opposed to hoppiness, or that hop bite. So that's why those New England IPAs feel much, you know, those hazy IPAs feel rounder. They're not as that, they don't have that hop bite like a West Coast IPA does. And with a West Coast IPA or an old school British IPA, then you're going to want to increase the calcium or the calcium sulfate or the gypsum in order to get that, you know, sort of crispy hop bite that is desirable, like the Burton-on-Trent style of IPA. I think those two chemicals, if you just had those and you experimented with just those two, I think you're going to see a world of difference.
I keep saying this every time we talk about water chemistry, but maybe this will be the thing that gets me off my butt.
It's worth a shot, right? It's you know, I know if you can overdo it, but especially if you don't know where you're starting, what you're starting with. But
right.
Again, that's the big to me. That's the big challenge. And once you know where you're starting with, it all starts to fall in line and kind of make sense after that.
Well, awesome. I think you've done what you promised. It's pretty simple.
It can be incredibly complicated. I read that the brewing water book from Colin Kaminsky and John Palmer, and it's a read. I'll tell you that. It's a read.
Intense.
It's intense, yes. And it gets, you know, it goes into the weeds, and you can certainly go down that path, and I did, but I still like the idea that I try to keep things as simple as possible. And, you know, I could be getting some things wrong, and I would love to hear if I did, or, you know, maybe I'm confused about something, but I've been making good beers with these water profiles, and I've tried all different kinds of water profiles and they all seem to be good. And I think it's because, you know, starting with RO water really does make it easy.
Well, there you go. Well, you can find more stuff on brewcabin.com. And on Matt's YouTube channel, the Brew Cabin YouTube channel. And you're a good writer, you're a good video producer, and you're good at talking about stuff. So I appreciate
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah.
I appreciate your spending the time, and I look forward to next time.
Cool. Thanks.
Well, thanks again to Matt.
Easy.
Look for Matt's video on his YouTube channel called How to Master Brewing Water Chemistry in 9 Minutes. It's a good one, and I look forward to the next conversation with Matt. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.